is Building on the Solid Rock with Pastor Troy Neely of Calvary Chapel's Solid Rock.
Let every family find faith in the Father's love. This is where it begins. This is our cry, this is our song, Jesus the way. We find our life in Him.
The second, and I think the purpose for this miracle, Jesus uses it as a sign in order to build the faith of his disciples. And it works because it says, and his disciples believed in him. He did so many signs that it says that they weren't recorded in the scriptures and the books on earth could not contain them. Jesus did so many things. But there are some recorded, and do you know why they're recorded? I'll tell you why. It's personal. So that you might believe. For you personally.
While many have a tendency to view Jesus' miracles as nothing more than great works, they actually had more purpose than face value. In fact, many of the miracles of Jesus were proclamations of his authority, as well as building blocks of faith for his disciples. In today's message, Pastor Troy reflects on the twofold nature of the very first miracle that Jesus performed, water into wine. In his study, you'll gain a better understanding of the nature of Jesus' miracles and how they were more than just divine favors. Now, here's Pastor Troy in John chapter 2 with today's edition of Building on the Solid Rock.
All this to say that Jesus clearly came for a purpose, that he had an agenda and a schedule to keep. One that no one else really grasped or understood. They just couldn't get it. Mary, his mom, wasn't on the same page all the time. She didn't get it. The disciples, they thought the kingdom was coming now. They were arguing about when you set it up, when you put your fork in the ground, when you put your stake in the ground, we want to be on your right and your left hand. They thought it was coming now. They didn't get it. John the Baptist, like I said, he had his doubts. There was an agenda that the Lord had, and this moment was not time for a public revealing of who he was, what he could do. You know, God has a purpose for your life. There are things that he would love for you because he's given you the gifts and the abilities to use them for his glory. Love for you to do if you just devote yourself to him. Oh, if you devote yourself to him and use yourself for his glory, he'd take care of all the other details. He'd take care of all the things in life for you. Direction, career path, all of that. He'll take care of that. If you would just honor him and use what you have for his glory. Not tomorrow, not after you've prepared for it, 5, 10 years, today. I don't have a lot of time. Well, either you're busying yourself with things that God hasn't given you, or if God's given you all of that, then he's only given you a limited amount of time. Find out what he wants you to do with a limited amount of time. And then do that for his glory. But do it today. This is the day of salvation. This is the day that the Lord has given, that we're called to rejoice and be glad in it. And in our life, things happen. But let me tell you, just as this moment had a purpose, every moment in your life, every trial, every need that arises and you feel like you can't meet and you need to depend on something or someone else, even every miracle that seems to happen, happens for a purpose. God has a purpose for them. I mean, you know, a miracle that happens isn't just so you can go, thanks God for bailing me out. Woo, man, love the Lord. No, there's a purpose beyond that. How shallow. The purpose is kind of what we see today, to help you grow in your belief, in your faith, and then to keep you accountable, to know God can do it. When he says he'll do it, when he asks you to do it, he can come through, and now you're accountable. How do I know? You saw that, what he just did. So don't just stand back and applaud God and say, thanks for getting me out. You're now more accountable. Why won't you do more miracles, Lord? Because all you're going to do is give me applause. I'm not here for that. These things drive us. These things inspire us. These moments, they're from God. So find out what God wants you to do in them. It'll transform your life. It'll make a big difference. Even Lazarus, you remember? Everybody, they were saying, hey, we need to get down there. Lazarus, he's sick. And Jesus said, no, we're gonna hold back. And basically, he tells them, we held back too long, but it wasn't too long for the Lord. It had to happen so that God could be glorified. But the ladies, everyone else, they didn't get it. If you would have come sooner. You ever felt like that? Oh, Lord, if you would have just done this and this, we've got it laid out. We've got his plan. Lord, I need a miracle. Here it is. Do that. Lord's thinking, you don't get it. I'm doing so much more than you understand. You have to trust me with my timing, with everything. So his timing is important. The moment, this moment in your life is important. Verse 6. Now there were set there six water pots of stone according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. Jesus said to them, fill the water pots with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast. And they took it. When the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made of wine, and did not know where it had come from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, the master of the feast called the bridegroom. And he said to him, every man at the beginning sets out the good wine. And when the guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now. Let's talk about Jesus and the miracle. There's a point. Weddings were the ultimate social event of one's life in Jewish culture. You may be very poor and not have money for anything else. But if a father had a son, because it was the father of the groom, or the family of the groom, excuse me, they're the ones who paid for the wedding. Because it was a way of showing your daughter, she's going to be taken care of. And we're going to show her just through the service alone, the ceremony alone, that she's going to be well taken care of. So if you were a poor person, there was one party that your family did plan, and that was the wedding. They were prepared for it. They planned for it. It was a big deal, and you may not have any other party before or after that. And one of the key components of the wedding was the wine. Now, it's because they didn't have sodas, they didn't have teas, they didn't have fruit punches, they didn't have the dry ice, you know, where it's boiling and everything. They didn't have sherbet. You put it in there and throw the Sprite and all that. You know, they didn't have all of that, all those options. It was water, some milk, usually, or wine. Wine was the sweet drink. It was the drink of joy and, wow, this is wonderful, laid-back time, festive. So when they made the wine, they would take it, and wine was almost never drank full strength because that would be a waste. Because this is supposed to be, this was for parties. This was for indulgence. This was nice, good to have. And so it was usually one part wine to two parts water. And that was kind of a rough standard for the wine. And when you would start out with any event, you would start out with one part wine and the two parts water, or, you know, whatever standard. But as the night progressed, you know, once they get the first taste, it's like, all right, this is great. But now we're into the socializing and, you know, since staying with that rich of a mix. And so to make sure that it lasts, it would get more and more watered down as the evening went to stretch it, especially if you're getting close. And so they would water it down, and by the end of a party, you got your weaker wine. So, no big deal. But if you get the idea that these were like drunken parties, then you have the wrong impression of what's going on here. That's why the comment, you have kept the best wine until now. You didn't start diluting and then come in and say, hey, we're out of wine. So don't picture it as a drunken fiesta, because I'm going to tell you something about the Jewish culture. They don't need wine to have fun. All they need is a starter's pistol. That's all they need. There's dancing and celebration over there on an ongoing basis. You know, when they celebrate their Sabbath day, it's a quiet day. You know, work stops, lots of things stop, get in elevators, and they've got the Sabbath setting. So, you know, pushing a button is work. Not a lot of work, but apparently it's work. And so what happens is they have the Sabbath setting, and on the Sabbath day, you get in the Sabbath elevator, and it stops automatically at every single floor. So you don't have to push the button. So they're into their Sabbath, but after the Sabbath, when the Sabbath is over, they go out and they're celebrating. They're celebrating with one another. They're celebrating the streets. They're remembering the goodness of God, and they're celebrating life, motion, movement, getting outside again, all that stuff. This is not wine for getting smashed. This is wine that is for rejoicing and celebration and a special occasion. It was simply a feature at the wedding. In fact, it would be a social embarrassment to have no wine at your wedding or to run out. It would be worse to run out. That's why they would water it down to make sure that it lasted. These parties, these celebrations, these wedding festivities could last quite some time. And to run out of wine was social disgrace. Because, see, remember, it was the groom, his family, providing. And so, here's the picture. If my family and me as the groom, we didn't have wine at all, it'd be like slapping them in the face like, hey, when your wife marries me, party's over, there is no fun. I mean, I can't provide anything. Certainly not something that's cause for rejoicing. And so there was wine. But to run out made a similar statement. Like, we don't have the means, or I, as the husband, the one who's going to take care of her, I don't have the means to make sure that we even have wine till the end of the wedding. And so how am I going to take care of her for the rest of our lives? It was not a good statement. So when Mary shows up and she says, they have no wine, it's with a sense of urgency. It'd be like this. One of our weddings, there's a wedding official, or not the official, a coordinator, wedding coordinator, and all of a sudden he's been in a panic, he hasn't thought clearly, 5 minutes until showtime, and all of a sudden they just realize he doesn't have his pants! And you go to the coordinator, and you go, the groom doesn't know where his pants are! That's the same scenario here. That's kind of tragic. Not good. And so there's a sense of urgency. So what does Jesus do? Well, they had 6 water pots of stone, each holding about 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus has them fill them to the brim with water, and voila, there's wine. Pretty easy for him. Now, that's between 120 to 180 gallons, if you're doing your math, of wine.
There's much more to learn from today's edition of Building on the Solid Rock. So be sure to stay tuned for the next part of Pastor Troy's message. Building on the Solid Rock is the radio ministry of Pastor Troy Neely of Calvary Chapel Solid Rock in San Antonio, Texas. If you're in the San Antonio area, we'd love to have you join us in person for our weekly services on Sundays at 9 and 11 a.m. for a time of worship and learning from the Word of God. You can also come by on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. for our in-depth Bible study. Learn more about the church and find directions at our website, buildingonthesolidrock.com. That website again is buildingonthesolidrock.com. We hope we see you there. Now, here's Pastor Troy with more of today's message. Building on the solid
rock. William Barclay wrote in his commentary that there was no wedding party on earth that would have been able to drink 180 gallons of wine, especially near the end of the party. So this isn't Jesus simply meeting a need. Okay, I'm Jesus, I know just enough. 1/4 of one stone jar. It's going to be perfect, don't trust me. No, it was Jesus lavishing it on, pouring it on. And one of the purposes for this miracle, not the purpose, we'll talk about that purpose in a moment, but I think one of the purposes for this miracle is that it was just simply an amazing gift for a poor couple. Obviously, they've run out of wine, so that shows us that they were poor. They didn't have enough to go to the end of the festivities. Either that or Uncle Louis was in the wine. So it was an amazing gift for a poor couple. It was very good wine. Jesus made it. It was clearly good. Second, it was more than enough for the party, which meant that this young couple, and he already said, this is the best wine, could have sold that and made a healthy profit with as much wine as was produced. So it'd be a great gift for them. Here's the point. When Jesus is in your life, when Jesus is a part of what's going on in your life, it brings joy. He covers the gaps where we're going to run out or fall short. And he provides more than we need. But it's when he's involved, when he's around, when we invite him. But another purpose for the miracles we see, we need to move quickly, beginning in verse 11, this beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum, he, his mother, his brothers, and his disciples, and they did not stay there many days. Finally, Jesus and his men. We're going to get to the purpose or the motive. We learn two things about this miracle in verse 11. One was that this was the first miracle. That phrase, this beginning of signs, is saying this is the very beginning of Jesus giving signs, declaring his ministry and who he was. Now, this is important for us to understand because there are books that some Bible versions include called apocryphal books. There's some history in there, some names that we read from the scriptures, but there's a lot of story and indulgence in there too. Things that are not true. That's why the main Bible does not include those books. And in some of those books, they will say things like Jesus raised people back to life when he was a kid. You know, a kid falls down dead and Jesus kind of raises him up. Oh man, Jesus did some amazing things. Or Jesus was the best art student. Like, you know, in class, they're making clay doves. And the one kid over here makes his little clay dove. Mine's better than yours. And Jesus makes his and, oh, look, it's flying away. Who's rocking the house now? J-E rocks the house. So John gives us a little insight here, and we understand that no, Jesus didn't do those things because those would have been signs that pointed to who he was and what he was able to do. They didn't happen. This is the beginning of signs. His ministry is beginning to take off. Now things are happening. So the second, and I think the purpose for this miracle, Jesus uses it as a sign in order to build the faith of his disciples. And it works because it says, and his disciples believed in him. He did so many signs that it says that they weren't recorded in the scriptures and the books on earth could not contain them. Jesus did so many things. But there are some recorded. And do you know why they're recorded? I'll tell you why. It's personal. So that you might believe. For you personally. God said, I want some recorded because I know this person is going to be here this day. And I want them to read about me. And I want them to see what I'm able to do. Not only here, but in their life. So that you could believe. John chapter 20, verse 30 and 31 says this, and truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. It's for you. This is a part of what Jesus promised Nathanael. Remember when he told Nathanael, he said, so you believe in me because I told you I saw you under the fig tree? Well, you're going to see greater things than this. Well, this is one of those greater things. Listen, guys, the idea of walking with the Lord, following the Lord, being a Christian is not about just being a good moral person. Studying a book that gives us some insight in how to be a better moral person, how to treat others, and that there are plenty of guidebooks that teach us different ways to be nice, kind, and to treat others. This is not a book primarily about morality and being a moral person. This is a book that tells us about what's going on in life, where we come from, where we're going apart from Christ, and where we can go if we put our faith in Him. This is a book that reaches out to us. It's alive like a sword. A sword, you know what someone does with a sword? They jab and they pierce and it cuts in deep. This is a book that does that. It's like it knows you. It knows exactly what to say on any given Sunday or Wednesday or Tuesday or whatever day you open it. And you get the sense that it's not the book talking, but there's someone. It's that pastor guy. No, it's not him. It's the Lord. He speaks to your heart. Sometimes people will say, you were speaking and you were speaking right to me. Did someone kind of tell you something? I don't know about your guys' lives. And there's enough of you and I'm not all that. I can't keep so many things straight in my mind. That's why I have to do notes here. That I'm not thinking, I can see your sin. I know your sin. I know what you need. I really know what you need. I don't see. I don't know. I don't all that. We're sharing. But God takes His word and He jabs and He pierces and He says, that's you. Oh, this is you. This is what you need to deal with. I'm speaking to you. And when you hear that voice, don't get discouraged. Guess what? That's the process we the rest of our life we experience. Is the Lord, His word, it cuts in. Sometimes it encourages, it blesses, it reminds us. We can get up and walk on. But sometimes it cuts deep. We realize, that's me. Like David, when he was told the story about the person who had the lots of lambs and flocks, and yet he stole the one ewe lamb that someone loved so much. And David said, that person should be killed and then charge him. You know, David was upset. And then he said, but that's you. Oh, whoa, that's me. Sometimes we sit here and we listen and we hear it. We hear it. It's good, man. It's for my spouse. Man, Lord. And all of a sudden it's like, oh God, Lord, I pray they're listening. Pray they're listening. And the Lord's like, hello, hello. I'm talking to you. But we're listening for everyone else. Listen, the word of God, it's for you. This is that you might believe. This is that you might know. This is that you might grow. So as the Lord starts to speak to your heart, what do you want to do with that? What are you going to do with that? I guess is more important. A lot of good intentions. We intend to do a lot of things. What are you going to do? Because that's the only thing that makes a difference. So we're going to pray. And I invite you to take this opportunity prayerfully with the Lord speaking to your heart to give yourself to Him. Whether it's a recommitment of your life to Him, or maybe you've never had a relationship with Him. He's never led your life. You've never sensed that you're giving Him leadership and you're waiting to hear His voice rather than just act upon your own instincts. Because He's willing to lead us that way if we wait, if we seek, if we trust. And if we're willing to deny ourselves, pick up our cross, and follow after Him, which He commanded us to do. He didn't say, I will do that for you. He said, no, you do it. So if you're willing, if you hear His voice, this is the day of salvation.
We're so glad you joined us today for Pastor Troy's teaching in the book of John. If you'd like to hear today's message again, visit our website, buildingonthesolidrock.com. There you'll also find an archive of previous messages from Pastor Troy, as well as information about this radio ministry, Building on the Solid Rock. You might be interested in the church behind this ministry as well, Calvary Chapel Solid Rock. If you're in the San Antonio area, we'd love to meet you and have you come be a part of our weekly services. For the latest service times, please visit our website. You'll find a link to Calvary Chapel Solid Rock at buildingonthesolidrock.com. From all of us on the production team at Building on the Solid Rock, we'd like to say thank you for tuning in today. We pray you continue to seek God during these times of uncertainty and that you explore what He wants to teach you in His Word. Join us again as Pastor Troy continues sharing from the Gospel of John on Building on the Solid Rock.
Let the light of Christ shine as we grow in